philosophers in space, 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 space.
Only a Sith deals in absolutes.
There is no such thing as Silicon Heaven.
Then where do all the calculators go?
Uncertainty is inherently unsustainable. Eventually, everything either is or isn't.
Sparks happen. Yeah, she knows it's a multipass.
Welcome to Philosophers in Space. This is episode 19, and I am real excited about this one, Aaron, because while you and I might be in a simulation right now, we're not sure. However, in this simulation, the result is we're going to talk about Hang the DJ from Black Mirror.
Yeah, I'm mostly curious what you think. If we did a podcaster compatibility test, how do you think we'd do?
Yeah, I don't know. Would we, or are we in it right now? Is that we might maybe yeah, we're in the
if
test.
If we did poorly, would you still want to be on the? Would you still want to do the show, or would you want to call it there?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we're because you never know. What if the simulation we're in one of the minor ones where they we don't get along, but it turned out that was the vast minority. We would never know. We never know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm excited to talk about this. This is one of the first things we talked about in terms of doing the show, actually, was arguing about this episode because there's something that I want to argue about that I can't wait. But I guess I have to wait. There's something in this that I really think doesn't make sense. And I really think it's might just be a mistake, but I don't know. We'll argue about it later. However, that aside, this episode is amazing and I absolutely love it. This is the fourth episode in season four of Black Mirror. And this necessitates spoilers. So I'm going to go ahead and issue a spoiler. Mm. We cannot meaningfully talk about this one without spoiling the whole episode. So normally we try to hedge, like if we don't have to, we'll kind of just talk about the premise and then go from there. But this very much does rely on that. So if you haven't seen it, go watch it. It's only what, an hour, 45 minutes, an hour, something like that. And it's amazing. It's really good. So it's 51 minutes. I just realized I'm on the Wikipedia, so I can tell you that. go watch it.
Like most Black Mirror, it is standalone as well, so you don't have to worry about any.
Yeah, you don't have to
stuff.
Watch any other Black Mirror. Like if you've never seen the show, you could literally just go watch this, and that'd actually be a real good time. It'd be fun.
In theory, though, you've all seen at least one episode since we started with it way back when.
Yeah.
When we were young.
So all that spoilery stuff, warnings and all that aside, then I guess we should what? Should we get to the...
an exposition zone you can actually do this time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, here's how you know this was a good thing. I can actually summarize what happened in a meaningful way.
Oh, listen, dude. We're going to watch some movies eventually. It's going to get worse.
You're traveling through another dimension, beyond that which is known to podcasters. It is the middle ground between fair use and copyright infringement, between ordinary fanboying and meaningful analysis. It is the exposition zone.
Okay, so Hang the DJ. There are five houses, and they are all in different galaxies of space. No, that's not. Here, it's an... we're assuming you've seen it or you don't care about spoilers, which I hope it's all that you've seen it because you should go watch it. It's good. I hate spoiling stuff for people who haven't seen it, but so assuming you've seen it, just to remind you, maybe a refresher, maybe you watched it a year ago or something or whenever it came out. I guess it's only been six, 7 months. We just meet two people who are essentially using like a dating app. You know, it's kind of like Tinder. And the whole conceit though is that the app kind of decides everything for them. Like it says, okay, you're going to be with this person. You meet the person, you do whatever, you go into like this weird cabin thing at the end of it. But then it tells you, your relationship has an expiration date. So this relationship that you're having, you only get to have it for a specified amount of time. And the important part is that everybody in this little society. It's kind of a weird thing at first, and everybody within this group, this wherever we are, they all know that the app works with a very high rate. It works with a 99.8% rate, apparently, of finding your perfect match. And so everybody kind of accepts that, like, oh, even if I went on a date and it's somebody I really like, the app said, you know, I can only do it for 12 hours or for 12 days or for 12 months, whatever it would be, any amount of time. I have to just listen to it because it's going to find me my proper match. And what happens is this first date that we witness, these two people really miss each other. I mean, there's some other details I don't know if we have to get into, but these two people really miss each other. And so they're going on there. There are other dates. And I think one of them gets saddled with like a really long relationship. And, you know, the other has some some short relationships. And they're just not really happy. And eventually, you know, they kind of bump into each other. And eventually they realize that they're just not happy and they want to be with each other. And they decide to rebel against the dating system. And it's interesting because for a second, it seems very totalitarian. Like, at first you're just like, oh, it's the dating app, it's the guidelines. And then when they start to decide to rebel, it's like there's people are like armed and stuff and like going to stop them from. So it's like, what kind of world are we in? And it turns out the kind of world we are in is once they rebel and try to leave, it turns out that they dissolve. And they're actually in a simulation the entire time. And the simulation, it reveals that the simulation ran 1,000, which seems like a way too small number for something like this, but that's okay. 1,000 simulations and of this very couple, like these two people. And in 998 of the simulations, the couples rebelled and left and wanted to be with each other. And presumably in the other two, I don't know, they settled with somebody else. But the whole point is in these simulations, it was actually to serve for another dating app, like the actual dating app, which is in the real world, allegedly, like we supposedly were in the real world. And these two people, the two characters that we've met the whole time, the real versions of them were just like in a bar or something and had kind of pulled each other up on the dating app. And the it turns out that they are a 99.8% match. And so they kind of smile at each other, and that's the whole point. So this whole world that we thought was the real world initially was actually simulations in which they were testing compatibility by seeing how often the two people would break the system and run away and all that. So that's our show. That's it. Unlike Dune, I was able to explain it, and it only took, you know, four or five minutes. And
I feel so bad because you left out one part that I have to.
Oh, well, okay, sure. There is one part that's kind of important, but go ahead.
Yeah, right. So there's this one part where they end up back together after they've been in these unhappy relationships with other people, and they decide not to look at the timer so that they're going to not know how long they have together so they can just enjoy it that way. And then because he's enjoying it too much, he sneaks a peek to see how long it's going to last. And it starts off at 5 years, but because he looked at it, the timer starts to drop, and it drops and drops, and he has to tell her what he's done, and he gets angry. They end up splitting up at that point. And then, like you said, they later realize they still want to be together and run off together.
Right. That component, I actually really like that, too, because, they decide not to look, and then once he looked, it, like, changed everything. And so being aware of it kind of changed all the calculations, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, and this was also during that part of their relationship where they have that really great conversation in the gazebo where they're talking about what if they're the simulations for people, or, like, you know, how do they know if they have any sort of freedom in any of this, or if they're just being, like, how do they know if they're actually the perfect match, or if the person is just being worn down to the point of being convinced that this is fine, which I think is a great critique of the whole concept of dating apps.
Yeah, I agree. But there's so much to talk about. I have a bunch of, like, related to this specific episode stuff I want to talk about, but you also have some really interesting philosophy to bring into it.
Let me just break out this thought experiment to start with.
Oh, okay.
I think, and I'll run us through this thought experiment, which is tangentially, I think, related, and in some situation, in some of the things you want to talk about, it'll touch on that some, I think. So this can be like our little cornerstone for, I think, all of the different topics that come out in this episode, if that makes a little
sure.
sense.
Sure. We're going to hop right in the thought experiment machine.
Initiate thought experiment. Thought experiment online.
Yeah, let's do it.
Awesome.
So this experiment is called Newcomb's Paradox, named after the guy who first put it together, William Newcomb. And there are a couple of different versions of this. It's sometimes referred to as the two-box paradox. And I'm just going to try to give you like a streamlined, simplified version so that we can quickly see how it will connect to what we're talking about here. So imagine a machine shows up, right? And it's the people tell you this machine is going to infallibly know what your actions are going to be going forward. So that's the basic assumption of this thought experiment. This machine can near perfectly predict your behavior. Hmm. Okay?
Interesting.
And they put two boxes in front of you, box A and box B. Box A is transparent and always has $1,000 in it. This one gets weird.
I understand the regard you have for my capacity to follow thought experiments now, but go ahead, go on.
Sorry, I checked in too soon. I'll check in a second here. All right. Box B is opaque and has...
What is that?
Somewhere...
I don't know what this is. I don't know what this experiment is. What does that mean? No, go ahead. Okay, box B.
Box B is opaque and has somewhere between $0 and $1 million in it.
Oh, okay. Okay, sure.
Right. Now, here's where it gets a little weird. What determines how much money is in box B is what that predictor machine decides you're going to pick when you get to pick between either taking only one box or taking both boxes.
Wait, one or both? Why would...
Yeah, so in a second, you're going to be asked the following
question.
Why
wouldn't you always take both? I'm sorry. That part, now I don't understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's where the weird part comes in. Here's how it works. The predictor is going to predict what you're going to pick, either both boxes or just one box, okay? Mm-hmm. If it predicts that you're going to pick both boxes, there will be zero money in box B. If it predicts that you are going to pick only box B, there will be $1 million in box B.
Okay.
So that's the conundrum is, are you willing to bet that the thing will incorrectly predict which box you are going to pick, or do you just pick box B, assuming it was going to predict that you were going to pick box B, and thereby ensure that you get $1 million? That's sort of the rough and tumble intro to the question. It's an attempt to make you wonder about whether you would truly believe that this machine that someone says can predict your behavior is actually going to successfully predict your behavior. Because if it is, you absolutely should only pick box B. Otherwise, it will predict that you're going to pick A and B, and you'll end up with only $1,000.
That is the weirdest thought experiment I've ever heard.
That's why I checked in early. Is because
yeah,
I'm like, this one's
you
get
did
weird.
Check in a little too early.
At
though.
The wrong time.
Yeah,
wrong
no,
time. You're right. I did that
I don't
wrong.
Understand but, what... Like, what is the question you're even asking in the thought? Like, so the question you're asking in the end, it would usually be, I guess it's not which box, it's how, like, what is the question of this? What is it?
So the question is, would you intend to pick box B or box A and B? This has to do a little bit with game theory and like, what is the most rational thing to assume that you should do in this situation? Should you trust that the thing is going to be what someone says it is and that it will successfully
predict your
behavior?
Yeah, this is why this is, I mean, I think this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. You're telling, are you, when you do thought experiments.
She's so judgy.
normally when you do thought experiments, I mean, are we taking this for granted? It's like you did a thought experiment where you're like, okay, here's a thought experiment. There's a banana peel on the ground. And you're about to walk and step and slip on it. Now, here's the question. If you're going to slip on the banana peel, there wasn't a banana peel. Now, what do you do? And I'm like, what
right.
What
so,
are you
yeah.
talking about? Was
so,
there
so
a
the
banana
part-
peel on the ground? What a thought experiment, you just do, you say what it is, and then that's what it is. So, like, does the machine, can the machine predict our behavior or not?
Well, in the thought experiment, the idea is that it predicts it with near certainty. If that seems weird to you, consider that that's what's going on in this episode with the dating app, supposedly, and that apps on various levels will claim that they can predict effectively who you will be more happy with to a high degree of certainty, if not near certainty. So it's not, I think, unreasonable to imagine the possibility that you could have these simulations, right? And that's the way that this program would run in theory. That's why it ties in again with this episode, is the predictor bot could work by running a bunch of simulations of what you would do given a sufficiently advanced knowledge of you as an individual, much like the dating app runs a bunch of simulations of what you would do and tells you that this person's going to be a good match.
Yeah, well, so the problem with this thought experiment, though, is isn't it just a recursive thing where it's like, it, you know...
Okay. There is a reverse causality problem.
Yeah, and it just, so it doesn't... Yeah.
I don't That's get why it's sort it of a says. Paradox.
Yeah, it's just a paradox, right? Yeah, I don't understand. I guess I don't understand what's being accomplished by the thought experiment. Most thought, like when we talk Chinese room, you know, I'm like, okay, I get what the arguments are and I see like the implications of this. With this one, I don't even understand what point is being made, to be honest with you. So maybe this is where the dumb layperson has to tell Aaron to really explain why this is a useful thought experiment.
So I think for a lot of people, it's a thought experiment. The purpose of a thought experiment is often to get your intuition pumps going. And I think the reason I bring this one up is because the intuition pumps that I think it gets going along with this episode is, what is your base reaction to being told, here's this assumption, this machine can accurately predict your behavior, and then how do you act based upon that information?
Right.
Do you take seriously that it will effectively predict your behavior in the future and therefore pick only box B? Or are you the kind of individual who is so deeply suspicious of any sort of fatalism or any sort of determinism that you believe that you can outsmart the predictor and will therefore intend initially to pick B, but then pick A and B when... it is already decided what it's going to be in the boxes. Does that make sense a little
kind
bit?
Kind of. I don't know. I really don't know. I guess what I would say is that I think it goes along with some conversation, like Arrival, the conversation we had about Arrival, where I just don't think there can exist a thing that can predict your behavior and then you can also simultaneously be aware of it. Like, I feel like then it changes the assumption. So, like, I feel like you could make... I feel like we could get to the point in technology where we could maybe make some high accuracy predictions about what people might do in a given situation. But then the minute that person's aware of that thing, then it totally changes all of the calculations, doesn't it? I mean,
I think if you're making a prediction on the deep heart questions.
It doesn't seem that hard to me. If you're making a prediction on a set of data that is, okay, what's in this person's brain? And the box being in the person's brain was not part of the data you were using. So, like, the box wasn't using the box. Otherwise, that's infinite. It would just have to keep saying, oh, no box, therefore A, or A and B, a box, therefore B, box. And it would just go back and forth forever. And it'd be a runtime error in the programming you're doing. You know what I mean? Like, you can make a prediction based on what, like, you took a scan of my brain before, you know, as you asked me the question or something. But then once I'm aware of the box part, then you've got new variables and you would need to rerun the thing again. And it, you know, it totally changes it.
So what I would say is that it changes it. I can't say for sure that it totally changes it. By which I mean, we don't know how being aware of that predictor's existence and its prediction will cause you to necessarily behave one way or another. It will influence your behavior.
No, I'm not saying
it
necessarily does, but that's just like any other part of the factor. Mm-hmm. That's just like any other part of the data that the box allegedly would be using. You don't know that any of the shoes you were wearing definitely, you know, predicts one way or the other, but it could have been part of the data that went into the backdrop of a decision, you know?
And this is why I bring this thought experiment up, is because I think this episode points toward or sort of makes a bit of a reference to it in that scene that we talked about where the time goes down and in the scene where she talks about how she doesn't want them to look at it because it changes things.
Yeah.
Right. I think what you're saying is entirely right, that part of part of the problem is that the predictor does influence us by us becoming recursively aware of its predictions and then second guessing our own choices.
I mean, I just look at it as a very complicated version of rock, paper, scissors. You know, it's like, what are you going to pick? Going into it, what are you going to pick? And maybe a computer could scan your brain or my brain. Let's say we've got some complicated computer scanning that can somehow predict with high accuracy what you and I are going to do if someone just randomly says, hey, rock, paper, scissors. And so like it scanned all my brain. It's figured out that if somebody just comes up to a stranger, comes up to me and says, hey, man, rock, paper, scissors. I'll go, okay. And it predicts like most, I'm pretty much always going to do rock, you know. But then it tells me.
Nothing beats that.
Yeah. No, good old rock. Nothing beats rock. Because I love that Simpsons episode. So that's why I do it. It determines with high level accuracy that that's most likely what I'm going to do. But then the stranger tells me, huh, yeah, I have that prediction box and I'm using that against you. So therefore, what are you going to do? And it's like, well, it would need to rescan me. You know, like it couldn't. It's not as though the box is going to know that I know and then is going to know how I'm going to react to it. No, you know, like it infinitely could regress. I could choose any number of new levels of thing. I could say, well, then therefore I'll do scissors because then it was going to do paper. But then it knows that. So I'll do, you know, paper because then it's going to do that. You know, like it could go forever. So what I'm saying is once you
introduce that. Well, it could go forever if it wanted to get 100%, but if it wanted to, you know, predict.
I don't think it could even reasonably predict it because once you.
If you assume that it can reasonably predict what you're going to do the first time around, I'm not sure why you would assume that it couldn't incorporate the additional factor of you having a knowledge of a prediction going into an event.
So like the prediction machine would then try to factor itself in how exactly. My brain is likely to use that information.
Right, knowing that Thomas is
which is why
a double bluffing kind of guy, he'll stick with the rock even knowing the prediction.
So it would know, but to me, I guess maybe where this is breaking my brain is then I don't care. Now I'm to the point where I don't care. So like that must mean
that's what part of this paradox.
No, that must mean then I would choose box. What, B then, right?
B, yeah.
Because I'm to the point where
you would just do what the robot tells you to do.
Yeah, I would do what the robot tells me to do. Because if that's where we're going with this, that somehow the box can also accurately predict how many levels of rock, paper, scissors my brain would think is a good amount. But that's, the answer is my brain would be like, well, no amount because the stupid robot knows. So I'll just pick something at random. And then that would be how I would break. And then it would evaluate what random thing I would pick because we're
that's
not good
exactly
at generating
thought experiment.
Random rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah, I just wanted to drive you into despair.
Oh, you did. No, okay. I get it now. I'm sorry that I showed some resistance to this thought experiment because, you know, I think I was just fighting it, you know, but I accept my robot rock, paper, scissor overlord now. And you're right. So, okay. So I get it. So I would pick B then, I guess is the answer. I didn't get how I even factored into that thought experiment was honestly why I didn't understand it. I was like, what are you even asking me? Like, it's just, you've just described a system, you know, like I didn't know how does my choice interact with this? But I guess B is the answer then. If that's my view, then B is my answer.
Yes, that's sort of the way that goes. Like if you're more prone towards the fatalistic view, you will tend towards B because you will believe that the predictor can accurately predict what your behavior is going to be. And if you are more prone towards the free will view, you might try to resist that somehow.
I don't know on what basis you could ever do that, but I'm curious if anyone listening was able to puzzle through all that. That was a complicated one. So I see why you wanted to check in with me. I appreciate it.
You really did
jump the gun. Okay, there's the box. Are we okay? Are we okay? Do you know what boxes are? There's a box. Do I need to explain that? Are you with me?
You do enough philosophy, you really, really do lose track of where the line is between what other people understand and don't. How about this word? And okay.
Oh, good times. We have fun. No, that's interesting. But I do. You're right that I glossed over that part in the exposition because I did think it was like a wholly different issue. And it sounds like it's more the issue along the lines of the thought experiment you wanted to talk about. So, yeah, I mean, what do you think about that? I think it was when I saw that part of the plot, I really liked that part personally. I thought it made sense to me. Like, yeah, okay, if you discover what, you know, if you look at that information, then it has to update what it thinks about you. And I also love the drama of it. I actually really enjoyed that part of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, you know, they both really want to be together, you know, and like he just couldn't resist looking at it, you know, to make sure. And it just, I really loved the kind of the tragic aspect of it. Explain the bridge between that and the thought experiment, I guess.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a couple of bridges, right? So there's this question of, are we able to just be predicted? Are we such simple things that, you know, a sufficiently advanced mimic of us in a simulation can predict our behavior effectively? And is that something we should be depressed about at the end of this episode, or something we should be upbeat about? And also, what does it mean for living with this technology? That's sort of the reoccurring theme of Black Mirror, is how does this technology change us? So how does having this predictor device at our disposal alter our behavior, and is it for the better or for the worse? So, like, this is one of those episodes where I think, and this is why I like the paradox, and I like that you ended up in the fatalistic place, because I think people read the end of this episode as being one of the most positive ones. And I think there's a much darker reading of it that isn't just they're in another level of the simulation.
Hmm.
Which is that I think what is beautiful about the story in the simulation is that they break away from their determined system and experience this moment of freedom, right? Where they think that they are bucking the system, essentially. Right?
Yeah.
But in the real world, they're going to go off of what the system says. And there's an awkwardness. There's that long sort of back and forth between them and listening to Hang the DJ. There's like, I see in their minds going through this whole thought process of, should I trust this? Is this really the right number? And you can see it affecting them. And you realize that they're not free the way the people at the end of that simulation were.
Interesting.
They're the people still stuck in that world of being controlled by that box.
There's a lot to talk about regarding that, because I think talking about whether or not it's a happy ending and all that brings in a lot more that I think maybe I want to talk about in the next episode, because
okay.
There's so much to talk about. We can do two, I believe.
You mean like simulation genocide?
Simulations. And I want to talk about just the whole premise of, well, a lot of stuff. But anyway, I see what you're saying there. It's really interesting. First off, I wanted to just clean up something I was saying earlier. When I was saying it would result in a runtime error, there's two separate things. When we talked about my rock, paper, scissors example, in that example, I didn't have consistent access to this machine. So that's why it could, you know, it could make a prediction of what I would do if I knew that it was trying to predict my behavior. And I think that could be a calculation that's run. But I do not believe that it could predict what I'm going to do if I have consistent access to the results of the prediction, because it is just recursive. It's just it's whatever, if that's the right word for it. I forget what the redundant. It's just, you know, it's a loop. It just could go forever. Like, oh, it tells me I'm going to do this. Okay, so now I react to that, and then it tells me I'm going to do this, and then I react to that, and that would go on forever. So that's what I meant. You know, that's why I meant it would have some sort of error. You can't both be acting in the world and then consulting something that's predicting how you're going to act and reacting to that and still have it be making accurate predictions somehow. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I do. I think it would become very difficult to simulate on the level of complexity that would be necessary, which is sort of a similar complaint that some people raise an objection to the simulation hypothesis at all, which we previewed a little bit, and I think we'll probably talk about some more next episode as well, since that all ties in with this, that are we always trapped in a simulation question, and whether a computer could sufficiently mimic a simulation such that we would be in one and not know it.
Well, yeah, I've talked about who's had that simulation argument? I'm blanking on the name now.
Bostrom. The most common name.
I've talked about Nick Bostrom's simulation argument on my show a long time ago, actually, with Phil Torres a bit. And it's funny because this episode, somehow it makes it seem a little more plausible, you know, where you're like that argument, the argument being that, you know, in the it's very simple, and I'm sure everybody's familiar with it, but just in case you aren't, like, well, I say it's very simple. It's very simple to grasp, like, the basic concepts of it, which is, you know, in the future, it's likely that, you know, we'll be able to make simulations that are lifelike, that seem like reality, that kind of thing for the beings that are in the simulations, and that those simulations will vastly outnumber the real world, you know, by a factor of a gajillion to one. And so therefore it's likely that we are two things. It's either very likely that we are in a simulation, or somehow people won't survive long enough, or for whatever reason, people won't end up making a bajillion simulations. And so that's the basic argument. I think it's really, really fascinating. But when you watch something like this, you're like, damn, there's more simulations to add to that number, to that numerator or whatever, you know, like maybe we are going to be in it. Maybe we are in a simulation.
Maybe we'll have to unpack that one a little bit more on the part two. I think there's some interesting, a lot of the arguments against, I think, fall in the computer science kind of world. So it might be good to actually brush up a little bit on the, like,
yeah,
why
I don't think...
can't a computer do these sorts of things? But then, you know, I think it's a very
I don't think that's
question.
A good, yeah, I don't think that's probably what we should talk about, but.
Yeah, probably not.
Wow, we're already, God, this show goes by really quickly. I think we have some later Patreon goal to make it longer, but we're not at that, and we've already over-delivered on Patreon goals. So we're going to call it, and we're going to go over to the After Dark segment, where I'm going to argue with Aaron at length for why this episode of Black Mirror has something in it that doesn't make sense. And I'm very passionate about it, and I'm curious to see if if Aaron can talk me down and what the listeners think. Actually, I'm immensely curious what you guys think. So please tune into that and let me know. But that's our episode already. I cannot believe how fast that whizzed by. Very interesting thought experiment once I stopped resisting it. And Aaron, I guess there's no need to tease next episode because we're doing a double. So
We'll do a double. But we do want to thank our top patron, as per usual.
Ooh, what is our top patron making you say this time?
Yeah, well, this time they said they're traveling, and they said, Aaron, please find a difficult word to pronounce. So I picked a word.
That's awesome.
Kweejibo.
Oh, from The Simpsons.
Yeah, there you go. See? What is a Kweejibo?
Doesn't he define it as like Homer, like a monkey?
Yeah,
like
a giant bald ape.
Yeah. It's been a few years, but I remember that one. But you knew
maybe
how to
the first
that.
Episode.
Please inflict stricter punishment on yourself, Aaron, because that wasn't. Yeah, I need something that you can't predict.
Next time I'll work harder.
Yeah. Oh no, that's awesome. Thank you so much, top patron, for making that happen. And just remember that you can go to patreon.com/0g and make Aaron say whatever you want him to say. And with that said, we'll have to see you find patrons after dark.
That's all for the main show, but if you'd like to go to patreon.com/0g, you can enjoy Philosophers in Space After Dark. Here's a little sneak peek for you.
I'm going to deliberately misunderstand whatever you say, so you go ahead.
Okay, so there is a Black Mirror. Okay, you with me so far?
Has been a burst transmission of Philosophers in Space. All music written and performed by Thomas Smith. If you've enjoyed your infotainment upload, please locate the nearest podcast interface device and fill it with 5-star ratings and glowing reviews. If you think Ground Control should spring for fun new goodies and content, consider supporting us at patreon.com/0g. You can find us on Twitter at @0gphilosophy, where Aaron will instantly and compulsively respond. Or you can email us at philosophersinspace@gmail.com. Finally, if you're sad that it takes so long for our signals to reach Earth, you can always find Thomas over at Serious Inquiries Only and Opening Arguments, and Aaron over at Embrace the Void. Until next time, live long and philosopher.